welcome to a new episode of The Brand Called You. Over the last so many months, we brought amazing people to you. But we haven't yet brought someone who has made his passion into his business. Ajay Jain, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh, for having me over.
Thank you. Ajay is a mechanical engineer, he's an MBA, and he's a journalist major from Cardiff. He is one of the most influential figures of the Indian travel industry. He's an accomplished photographer, he's an author, and he's the founder of Kunzum Cafe. Wow, what a journey. Ajay, tell me about your early career, some of your learnings, because I know you were a journalist in the old days.
So to give you a 30-second bio of my career, I started as a mechanical engineer from Delhi College of Engineering, went into, did my MBA, started my career in IT on the hardware side. Then I got into sports management. And then at the ripe age of 31, I decided to go back to a calling which I had in school, was to be a journalist. So I went, I dropped everything. I went back to school in the UK, studied journalism, came back, worked for the Express Group, quit that, started a youth newspaper, then was one of the earliest professional tech bloggers and columnists in the country. And then 2007, I decided to take up full-time travel writing and photography.
Okay, very interesting. So, you know, you were a journalist working for large newspapers. You know, before that, you were in the tech business. Why did you give up the corporate world and become a photographer?
I think for me, I can't visualize a life where it's all doing the same thing for all my life. And I have basically two red flags in my life. One is stay healthy. And number two, keep yourself financially secure. And after that, I think life should be full of ideas and experiments.
Amazing.
And that's what I've been done. That's what I've been doing. And that's why I've been changing careers. I've been trying new things. I've been trying new things for the first time. And I think I'm happy for it.
Fantastic. So let's talk about your first avatar as an explorer. And we'll talk about all your three avatars of being a photographer and an author. But as an explorer, when did you discover your passion to travel?
I think deep within, we almost everyone loves travel, right? But I think around 2006, 2007, I was at a personal crossroads in my life, both professionally and personally. And I felt I was going nowhere in life. So I decided to go everywhere. Right? So I started, I sat in my car. I drove to Spiti Valley in Himachal. I discovered a place called Kunzum La, from which my brand eventually emerged. And I realized that this is what I want to do. I want to travel and primarily travel within India to discover the country for myself and showcase what a beautiful country we have. And really go beyond Indian tourism with the cliches of Goa and the Golden Triangle, Taj Mahal, Kerala. So there's so much more waiting in India, and that's what started driving me.
Amazing. So when I was reading about you, I found an interesting phrase which said, you have chosen a path of adventure. Help me understand, because adventure means different things to different people.
So I think for me, adventure is more, it is both metaphorical and real. I am not, when you talk about adventure as people see it, you will not find me trying to climb mountains or doing things which are risky or too high endurance, because maybe I started traveling at a stage of my life where I was beyond all this, right? But metaphorically for me, like I said earlier, adventure means trying out new things, exploring, going into the unknown, whether it's my work, my career, my education, personal relationships. So for me, I'm an adventurer at heart. So that's how what defines adventure for me.
And which are some of the areas you enjoy traveling to? You said you want to showcase India. So let's talk first about India and then outside India.
So I think I've done some mega journeys in India, and most of my trips in India have been road tripping. And I strongly advocate that India has to be discovered by road, not by any other transport, because there is so much waiting out there. If you are behind your own wheels, you can take the car anywhere. You can, and most of my writings, most of my photography would not have happened if I was not in my own car. So my most memorable journey, and which I think is the most incredible journey on the planet, is I drove the entire span of the Himalayas from Kashmir to a place called Kibitu in Arunachal Pradesh. And that's where the road ends in India. And I covered Kashmir, Ladakh, Himachal, Uttarakhand, Nepal, Bhutan, the whole Northeast. And I think this is one journey on the planet which you will get everything. You talk about all the climates, you'll talk about tribes, history, architecture, culture, music, you name it, wow. It's on this journey.
Wow. And how much is the total distance and how long did it take you?
I actually did it in three phases, but my longest phase was about 2 months, 8,000 kilometers. But total, I drove for, I think, almost 6 months in three different phases because I was also driving slowly because I needed to stop and take my photographs and do my writing. And really, I think it's about, in fact, I'm currently writing a book on this journey. So I'll give you the exact figures after the book is done.
Amazing. Absolutely incredible. And tell me, just one more question on this journey.
Yeah.
Do you drive alone?
Yeah, mostly. Alone. And sometimes I would have a traveling partner. Okay. But I've realized one thing that when I go exploring, when I'm doing my writing and my photography, I need to be with myself or with somebody who's very, very like-minded or non-inclusive.
Okay. And what kind of vehicle do you use? Because these are some tough terrains you're going into, isn't it?
Yeah, so I've been using SUVs. Okay. So I started, my first car was a Scorpio, then I moved to a Pajero. Currently, I drive a Volvo. So, but yeah, you need SUVs.
Okay. Wonderful. And my last question of you being as an explorer is that, you know, as I speak to a lot of millennials who are also great travel people, who love experiences, my question to you is how are millennials changing the whole exploration of India?
I think one trait about millennials is for them doing things like traveling is a priority, is important to them. When we were their age group, I'm sure you will agree that it was all about career. Correct. Because the only thing that we were answerable to, okay, what are your grades in school and what are you going to do after that?
Absolutely.
But millennials are looking at life very differently. Correct. And that's why you see a lot of creativity coming out of them. Mm-hmm. There's another side to millennials, which we will not get into, mm-hmm. in terms of what a lot of employers and all have a problem with. Mm-hmm. But that's a different aspect altogether. Sure. But I think millennials are really trying to live life to the full.
Correct.
And I think it's extremely important for us to develop as human beings.
Correct. Very interesting. So let's move to your next avatar as a photographer. You know, my first question to you would be, what goes into making a good picture or a good photograph?
So a good picture is a good picture, mm-hmm. period. Mm-hmm. Right? It's very subjective. And I think if you are taking the photograph, you have to be happy with it.
Okay.
And it need not always be technically a great photograph, mm-hmm. right? Because there are n number of photographers who are great at the technicalities in terms of depth of field, the light, the aperture setting, shutter speed settings and all. But really, if the picture speaks to you and in turn speaks to others, that's a good photograph.
Okay.
That's how to define a good photograph.
And did you do any formal training in photography?
Yeah, I did some learning in photography when I was in the UK.
Okay.
And I also did a course when I came back to Delhi. So yeah, again, the important thing is I've always tried to stay in a student mode. So whether it was me interacting with a 16-year-old or a 60-year-old, if I had something to learn from them, even a tip in passing, I would try and learn that. So okay. So for me, it's always the motto is keep learning.
And, you know, as a photographer, which, did you prefer color? Do you prefer black and white? Do you do both?
So, today's digital cameras allow you to shoot raw images, mm-hmm. and then you can convert them into black and white or color. So, most of my photography so far had been in color. But my last book, which is called Indians, mm-hmm. is a collection of portraits from across India, mm-hmm. that I did in black and white. Mm-hmm. And I'm beginning to love black and white now.
I also love photography in black and white, but you're the expert. Tell me, why is it that black and black and white is so much more effective?
I think besides many other reasons, one is there's a certain timelessness to the whole image. Number two, a lot is left to the interpretation of the viewer. So you know that there are some Rajasthani women in bright clothes, right? So you imagine and you leave that and leave the interpretation to you, mm-hmm. that, you know, are they reds or greens or blues?
Yeah.
And so you get and there are very few distractions.
Yeah.
In color photo, there are too many distractions. Mm-hmm. So I think these are three main things which I realize are why black and white photography comes out as so strong. Mm.
So let me move to another part of photography, which is the ubiquitous camera in every single phone. I was reading somewhere that trillions of photographs are now being shot and uploaded into different kinds of cloud servers and storage, yep, etc. What is happening to photography as a passion or as a hobby with the advent of mobile phones?
So I think one is becoming very democratized, so which is a good thing. A lot of people also find it disturbing. Like you go to a restaurant and everybody's clicking photographs of the food, of themselves, and then sharing photographs with each other. So it's kind of, it can be disturbing also. But I think it's a good thing that people are being more mindful of what they're doing. They're capturing photographs, they're sharing. There's so much out there. But at the same time, there's still room for the professional. When I say professional, not necessarily somebody who's making a living out of it, but somebody who's taking photography to another level. Mm-hmm. And that's where I still believe that no matter what advertising your HTCs and all your Google Pixels and Apples do, the DSLR is still sacrosanct for good photography.
Okay. So I was going to come to that question to ask you, yeah, but you've answered it before that. But yeah. Let me ask you another question, which comes back to millennials. And I talked this about this to my children and my, you know, both my sons and our daughters-in-law. And I say that, you know, when someone looks at my photographs after I'm gone, they'll have faces to see. And that is, people can say, oh, those are my ancestors.
Yeah.
I said, when your grandchildren look at photographs, all that they will see is food. Right.
Yeah.
So what is this absolutely incredible passion for photographing food and putting it out on social media and not taking pictures of one another?
I have no idea.
You have no idea.
Because I've seen, whether it's a Facebook group or Instagram feed and all, somehow food attract the maximum number of followers.
I agree.
And I don't know, but I guess it just...
So 100 years from now, we'll have, you know, whatever, 200 million Indians who would have photographed, said my ancestors were all food.
Yeah, and I think a few generations down, I think food is going to be defined very differently because of the whatever's happening to the planet, yeah, but that's a different story altogether.
And that's also on a lighter note. Yeah. I don't mean any disrespect, yeah, to any millennials or anything. So last question, you know, you didn't answer it, but an NDTV today has shifted all their news reporting to a Samsung phone. How important is it for me to have a DSLR camera or higher levels of cameras to be able to take good photographs when you're getting such good cameras in phones?
I think, again, while I'm not an expert on video, but I think with the even 4K capabilities of some of the high-end mobile phones, I think for video, for broadcast, I think they are good enough. Mm-hmm. Samsung phones, your iPhones and all, they're good enough. What they're not good enough are for, even like a Netflix does not, I'm told, does not accept footage from a even a DSLR now.
I see.
They've raised the bar so high. And but when it comes to still photography, I don't think mobile phones, they're okay for documentation. They're okay for a certain kind of photography. You can do a certain level of street photography and stuff like that. But really, if you want to shoot specialized subjects, whether it's wildlife, Formula One, athletics, any other sports, even portraits, you need those DSLRs, you need those lenses, you need that capability to shoot in a burst mode. You need to be shooting a bird at one by 2,000th of a second. Mm. You need those depths of field, and mobiles can't do it.
Amazing. So before I move to your third avatar of author, I just remembered I haven't asked you a question on your travel. Do you also travel outside India?
I do.
And which are some of the places that you have liked a lot outside India and India?
So for me, outside India, the most fascinating places have been in Africa.
Okay.
So I've been to a few African countries. So, they include
Kenya, Tanzania.
Kenya, not Tanzania, but I've been to Kenya, I've been to Uganda, I've been to South Africa, I've been to Zambia. And I think there, it feels that when you're there, mm-hmm, you're back to where it all started from, which is actually a fact. Mm-hmm. Like all life started in Africa,
correct,
right? And there's a certain level of rawness, there's a certain culture out there, there's the wildlife, the expanses, it's a very different world out there. And I think a lot of these South Asian countries, Southeast Asian, African countries, we are the repositories of what the future should be in terms of nature, human culture, human heritage, and so many other things, which unfortunately the consumerism of the first world is actually destroying directly or indirectly. And so for me, the connect is with South Asia, Southeast Asia, and Africa more than anywhere else. Okay.
And in India, which would be some of your favorite? I'm going to be asked you to be a little biased, but which would be some of your favorite places to visit?
So I actually have three kind of categories of places which I love to visit in India. One is the complete Himalayan belt. Number two is the Northeast, and number three, all the wildlife parks.
Okay.
So these are my three genres, markets, you can call.
Fascinating. And last question on travel. You write a lot, and the thousands of people who will view our conversation, if they want to see some of your experiences and some of your journeys, where should they go and read about it?
So I have my blog, kunzum.com.
Okay.
So they can go there.
Okay.
And that's where I put up most of my posts and links to whatever I do. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the one place they can go to. Okay. And from there, they can pretty much find everything.
Okay, thank you. So let's move to your third avatar, which is as an author. You know, you were a journalist, or you are a journalist, and therefore writing was something which obviously you did a lot. But when I was reading about you, you have 9 printed books, 50 ebooks, and you are one of the most widely read bloggers. So what goes into writing a good book or a good ebook?
So I think very importantly, you should have something to say. You should have something to say well. It should be well researched. It has to be good quality content, which is kind of the taken. And that's where the starting point is. And if you ask me how I write my books, I think procrastination is my biggest enemy. So for me, life has always been either I'm like kind of my car is stalled, or I'm moving in the sixth gear, right? So when I sit down to kind of get motivated to write a book, I end up writing a book in 2 months, right? Mm-hmm. And then I could keep procrastinating I've got books which are lying incomplete for years, right? So, but I think very importantly, like I said earlier, the key to writing a good book is have something good to say, follow a certain discipline in terms of research, and then structure it well, and then make a lot of effort writing it well.
Wonderful. Though everyone says that, everyone has one book inside them, right? So therefore, everyone has something to say, but they don't know how to say it. So tell me about your two books that you have you brought for me also.
So while I love all my books, like we love all our children, but I think my latest book, it's called Indians. It's a collection of portraiture from across India. Over 10 years of driving in my car, capturing those photographs, presented in black and white. And that is my favorite book, not just for me professionally, but I think it's also become, although I've not made a political statement in that book, but there's an implication where I say that this book represents the diversity of India.
Correct.
And in today's day and age, when we are seeing so many divisive forces around us, we need to understand that India is a diverse country in terms of its human capital, in terms of its human and cultural heritage. And you cannot take that away from us, right? And rather than looking down upon it, we should celebrate it, and because that's the greatest wealth. Like, you know, whether it's the Baigas and Goans of central India, it's the Siddhi tribes who came from Africa, it's the Muslims, it's the Nagas, it's the Arunachalis, it's Hindus, Muslims, Sikhs, you name it, right? We are all Indians.
Correct.
And that's why I call my book Indians. And that's why I get a lot of satisfaction when I see those books, when I see that book and I go through those portraits. And that's what I'm propagating even on all my channels, that let's celebrate our diversity.
Correct.
And that's why I believe I find that my favorite book.
Okay.
And another book, which I actually wrote on a whim, and fortunately, whoever's read it has really liked it. It's called Don't Feel Stupid at 60.
Okay.
And it's a very different take. It's something which I wrote when I was about 42.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not for 60-year-olds. Of course, even 60-year-olds can read it.
Yeah.
But it's something like what I learned in life, and I kind of penned a lot of thoughts over there as to what kind of a life one should lead, so that when we are 60 or beyond and we reflect back, we don't feel stupid at an opportunity lost to lead a great and a fulfilling life.
Correct.
So these are two of my favorite books. Wow. Of course, like I said, I love all my books.
Absolutely. So I'm going to read your book on Don't Feel Stupid at 60, mm-hmm. because I have a book on retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that book's done extremely well. And that book is all about how Indians don't like to talk of retirement. And they don't even recognize that given today's health, our life post 60 will be almost equal to our working life.
Yep.
So therefore, we don't plan. So, you know, I'm sure that would be a fantastic book. And I love the title, Don't Feel Stupid. So I've got a couple more questions for you as an author.
Sure.
You know, when you write, and you said that, you know, when you start writing, you write for 2 months at a stretch and finish your book. But you also said that, you know, if you have something interesting to say, so my question to you is, what makes a good story?
I think, again, there's no simple answer to that, because anything can be a good story. Like, for example, I wrote a book which actually got me the maximum amount of publicity. It's called Peep, Peep, Don't Sleep, which is a collection of funny road signs that I collected on my journeys from across India.
Okay.
Right? Now, in a way, it's a story also. Right, because it's showing the humor side of India. It's showing how we use our English and at some places Hindi also. It shows the landscapes. It shows a little bit of the people. So anything can be a story. So a tweet can be a story. A 2,000-page tome can be a story. So there's no definition to a story. Mm. A story is anything that kind of appeals to people.
Correct.
It says something.
Correct.
And gets people thinking and talking about it.
So, Ajay, I'm going to move to a few questions for you personally.
Sure.
You know, the first one is that, are there any people who have had an influence on your life? And if yes, what have you learned from them?
I think the greatest, I won't say greatest, but I was fortunate to go to a school, St. Columba School, where I think I learned a lot of good values, although it was a missionary school run by the Irish Brotherhood.
Right.
But there, I think a few values that were taught to us, which I kind of imbibed within myself.
Mm.
And it's like about, that's where I learned the true meaning of secularism, mm. right? We were a Christian school and it was next to a big church, but not once was Christianity even spoken to us.
Hmm.
Right? Everybody was left to their own. We were taught good values, good mannerisms, the value of good education, the value of excelling in whatever you're doing.
Hmm.
So I think those values really kind of shaped me in a great way.
Hmm.
And sometimes today I see some of my WhatsApp groups of my classmates,
hmm.
and some of them I see the extreme views, and I tell them, look, we went to the same school. Like, what happened to you guys, hmm. right? So it's all about how you kind of imbibe what you're exposed to. And I think then it comes, maybe how you react to the same situation. Like the school I went to,
mm-hmm.
is probably the situation that, you know, your personal situation,
mm-hmm.
at home and the society you grew up in. And I think, again, I can say that we had a very, like, you know, personally, it was all about being good. Goodness was the kind of the underlying thing in our family. So I think these are the influences that kind of shaped me in what I am today.
Very interesting. Ajay, what would be 3 adjectives that define you?
Maybe not in single words, but maybe 3 phrases.
Okay.
I think one is, I'm very open-minded about things.
Okay.
Right? Open-minded, broad-minded, for myself and for others.
Mm.
Right? I allow myself to think differently and do different things, as I've been speaking about in the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And I encourage people around me to do that. Number 2, I think it's about being creative, mm-hmm. in whatever you do, whether you're selling computers when I was in IT, or whether you're writing books. I think creativity is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
And number 3, I think it's excellence, mm-hmm. because I get a lot of young people talking about millennials who come to me, you know, they're passionate, they want to be, they're passionate about traveling, writing, photography and stuff like that. And I keep telling them one thing again and again. I said, look, do whatever you want, right? But you have to excel in what you do. Because passion without hard work, dedication and a pursuit of excellence is just like smoke without fire.
Okay, very interesting. So my next question to you would be, and I'm not sure how relevant this would be the question is, when was the last time you did something for the first time? I mean, you keep doing lots of things for the first time.
I bought some mango orchards.
Oh, wow.
So I did that. So the last 2 years, I've been buying some mango orchards and some just agricultural fields around that near Muzaffarnagar.
Okay.
The idea is to develop a model of sustainability. So after buying that land, currently we are first making it chemical free,
okay,
which means that the crop yield is down. We haven't, the trees haven't given us as many mangoes. The output of other crops is low, but we are first making that place totally chemical free because we need to live in a chemical free world.
Mm.
And then the next step is to develop a responsible tourism model where in a place where we are, where tourism isn't even talked about, create an alternate model for tourism, which creates local employment, local opportunities, but all done sustainably.
Mm.
So that's what I did for the first time.
That's amazing. I've never heard an answer like this, but whenever your crop is coming out, do let me know and I'd love to be one of your buyers.
Certainly, certainly.
I know the fruit will be very good. So two more questions to you. You know, and my next question is on failure. In India, for that matter, in most of Asia, we don't teach children what is failure, that it's okay to fail. You know, we've all been taught by our parents, and we tell our teach our children that you have to come first, you have to be ahead of everyone else, you have to be better than everybody else, etc. And when people fail, then there's a challenge.
Yep.
And yet all of us have failed.
Yep.
What would be some of your learnings from some of your mistakes or failures?
So I think the most important thing about failure is not to dwell upon it.
Correct.
Right? You can't change the past, no matter what. Whether it's a personal failure or a professional failure, the only thing you can do is pick up the pieces and move on.
Correct.
And moving on means you either do the same thing better or do something totally different. And it's all right, like in business, where they say you can pivot.
Correct.
You can keep pivoting in your life again
Correct.
And again,
Correct.
Personally and professionally. So don't let failure bog you down. What's happened has happened. But just move on and do what you feel you should be doing. But do it very well.
That's very well said. So my last question to you, you know, in a life so well lived, with such amazing interests, do you have any regrets?
Yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have regrets that, why did I get into engineering? Because I got into engineering because my father pressured me, right? Why did I get into IT, right? Because I worked for five years in a company that my dad had invested in when I didn't want to be there, right? There are other regrets too. But if I reflect back, they're not regrets anymore.
Okay.
Why? Because everything has shaped me to what I am today, right? I wanted to go to St. Stephen's College. I came from an all-boys school. I wanted to go to St. Stephen's College to meet girls, right? I didn't go there. I went to engineering college. But there, because I got into the cultural society, I got into extracurriculars, I got into student politics, I think hold some leadership qualities in me, right? So no regrets anymore. I went into IT. I got exposed to certain business practices. I got exposed to people. I got exposed to management principles. I got to learned a certain way of thinking. So I think everything kind of added up to eventually making me a more creative person. In fact, when I finished my master's in journalism, I was 31.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went looking for jobs, I was deemed overqualified.
Okay.
And I would tell editors that how is a 21-year-old with no experience in life going to be a better reporter than me who's had already 10 years of so much exposure?
Correct.
But it didn't cut too much ice. So I said, okay, let me do my own thing.
Wonderful. Ajay, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you.
Same here, thank you.
And I look forward to following you on your blog, and I hope you're able to drive many, many more thousands of miles.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.